Welcome to episode 55 of the Fredcast for the week of February 5th, 2007. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, a ton of news, including the results from the Tour of Qatar, the 2007 Versus TV schedule, an 8-year doping ban for an American cyclist, a professional team decides to use Garmin Edge units on their bikes, and watch out for bike path traps. Following the news, the Endurance Sports Awards, an interview with Del Rusher of Cycle Sound, more on mandatory helmet laws, upcoming rides, and PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Fredcast is brought to you by Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, providing quality products and unparalleled customer service to the cycling community for over 20 years. And here's another reason to shop at Cambria. Use the promo code found in tonight's show notes at www.thefredcast.com for 20% off your entire order at Cambria Bike. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, they outfit the world. Welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast, and it has been just a busy, crazy week in the world of cycling news. I have a lot to tell you, so strap your helmet on tight. Don't worry, there's not a law about that, and let's get right into the news. Well, let's start off this week with the world of professional racing, and you'll recall that last week we were talking about the Tour of Qatar, and when I recorded the show last week, Tom Bonin was in the lead, having won several stage victories, and he looked dominating. Well, in stage number 5, he did not win that stage, losing instead to his teammate Wilfried Kretskens. And while Bonin did win the final stage 6 of the race, the yellow jersey and the championship of this year's Tour of Qatar actually did go to Bonin's quick-step teammate, Belgian Wilfried Kretskens, in 15 hours, 50 minutes, and 58 seconds. Bonin came in second in the general classification, 2 minutes and 9 seconds behind his Belgian teammate. And third place went to Steven de Jong, also from Quickstep from the Netherlands, at 2 minutes and 44 seconds. Not a bad result for the Quickstep team, and they're looking dominating this year and looking like they're going to be a team to be reckoned with. It's very early in the season, but to go 1-2-3 like that is really something amazing. And so congratulations to the guys in the blue and white jerseys from Quickstep. Well, there's a lot going on in European racing as well, all of it centered currently in France. So I've got a couple of stories here, and they're all going to sort of meld together here in the end. The first one concerns French sports minister Jean-François Lamour, who is suggesting that this week's hearing against Floyd Landis be postponed until such time as the United States Anti-Doping Agency has had a chance to rule in the Floyd Landis case. When Lamour was speaking in Paris last week, he said that it would be, quote, preferable to wait until after that March hearing in front of the USADA. Now, at issue here, of course, is the fact that when Floyd Landis had those purportedly positive drug tests at last year's Tour de France, that was on French territory. And therefore, the French sporting officials have the ability to hold a hearing and then ban Floyd from participating in sporting events in France. This, of course, could mean that if Floyd was found innocent by U.S. authorities, he still could have been found guilty by French authorities, thereby banning him from future Tours de France. So it would only make sense if they would postpone the hearing in France until the final outcome in the United States, so that we could proceed in a more orderly fashion. Not surprisingly, Floyd Landis's representatives have been quoted as saying that they're pleased with the fact that Lamour is recommending that they postpone this hearing. Can't say I disagree. I think it's a good idea. They should wait until after the U.S. has ruled, and then they can proceed with their hearing, no matter what the director of Tour de France thinks of that decision. Now, speaking of French cycling authorities, you'll recall that there is an ongoing dispute between the UCI Pro Tour and the organizers of the Grand Tours, namely the Tour de France, the Giro d'Italia, and the Vuelta a España. And part of that dispute is about the Pro Tour calendar, and part of it, of course, is about the teams that are invited to attend and race in the Grand Tours. The Grand Tours want more control over that, and the Pro Tour is saying, well, if you're a Pro Tour sanctioned event, you have to invite the teams that we invite. Well, that controversy is heating up once again. The organizers of the Grand Tours recently announced that only 18 Pro Tour teams would be granted automatic admission to their events, and that there would therefore be wildcard spots available for two other teams. With the Paris-Nice coming around, that means that the Unibet.com team and the Astana team, who were the last two to get Pro Tour licenses this year, those two might not get invites. And as it turned out, Unibet did not get an invite, and I'll have more on that in a second. Now, of course, Pat McQuaid, the director of the UCI, weighed in on this, saying, quote, "It's the UCI who decide the conditions of participation. The rules are made to protect the interests of everyone involved, the teams, the riders, and the organizers. It is neither possible nor acceptable for each different organizer to apply their own criteria. It's the job of the UCI to protect team rights." So, quite obviously, the UCI is upset about this. Interestingly, of course, another Grand Tour organizer, the people who put on the Vuelta a España, have weighed in on this ongoing power struggle as well. On Saturday, the head of the Spanish Grand Tour, Victor Cordero, said that he will not consider inviting Unibet to his race. He said, quote, "The Vuelta will share the destiny of Paris-Nice and the Tour. We accept the 18 Pro Tour teams and will give away four invitations. One will be for Astana, the team leader of the last winner, that was Alexander Vinokourov, but we do not consider Unibet among the three remaining." Now, one of the problems that's going on here with Unibet is the fact that Unibet is actually sponsored by a internet betting site. And according to French laws, Unibet.com cannot legally compete in France. Now, the European Commission has been called upon to make a decision in this case, but until then, the French are standing behind the fact that they do not want Unibet participating in sporting activities on their soil. Now, here's the rub that happened this week. Today was the start of a multi-day stage race in France called the Marseillaise, and while one of the people that got the most attention at the race was Tyler Hamilton, back for his triumphant return to racing on the professional circuit after his two-year doping suspension. One of the other stories that came out of the race was the fact that the Unibet.com team showed up to race and they weren't allowed to do so. Now, Unibet's Baden Cook is the defending champion from last year's Marseillaise, so instead of deciding not to race, the team showed up in jerseys with big green question marks on them, so that way they weren't seen with the Unibet.com logo. What's going to happen to this controversy remains to be seen. I frankly think that the whole Unibet thing is a tempest in a teapot and something which will probably go away. Think about the fact that one of the big teams last year was Predictor Lotto. Well, they're sponsored by the Belgian lottery. Isn't that gambling as well? So really, what's the difference there between Unibet and Predictor Lotto? I think that this will all end up going away. What I do not think will go away, at least not that quickly, is this controversy between the Pro Tour and the Grand Tours. That is still bubbling over and will be for quite some time. Now, of course, the riders have also weighed in on this subject because, you know, every country needs to be heard from, right? The Riders Association, or the CPA, put out a statement last week that said, quote, "Having taken notice of the recent decision of the tour organizers not to allow two Pro Tour teams in their races in 2007, the Riders' Council wishes to stress that it is totally unacceptable for riders that participation to their races be unilaterally determined by organizers. Riders and teams, but definitely also organizers, will have to respect the UCI rules, and these rules can only be changed by a democratic procedure as foreseen in the UCI statutes, and certainly not in a one-sided manner by one of the parties. The Riders' Council fully herewith joins the position taken by UCI Pro Tour teams in a meeting last week with the UCI. Teams and riders have asked the UCI to take all adequate measures in order for all UCI Pro Tour teams to participate in all races on the 2007 UCI Pro Tour calendar." It's an interesting situation, and one that's going to take some time to get fixed. For those of you in the United States, while we're talking about professional cycling, sometimes the closest that we can ever get to some of these professional cycling races is right in front of our television. And while we used to watch OLN or the Outdoor Life Network, they've of course changed their name to Versus, and they've released their 2007 TV schedule for professional cycling. It includes such names as Paris-Nice, Paris-Roubaix, Amstel Gold, the Tour of Georgia, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, La Flèche Wallonne, the Tour of Switzerland, of course the Tour de France, Paris Tours, Tour du Faso, and coming up in just a couple of weeks, the Tour of California. They actually have extended same-day coverage of the Tour of California every day of the race, which I think is going to be great. As you know, last year, the Tour of California was extremely popular. I think I heard recently it was the largest sporting event in California last year, and that's saying something. So you'll be able to watch that on Versus, and of course I've put a link in the show notes to where you can find the TV schedule for Versus, for the Tour of California, and for all of their cycling coverage. Of course, you may not know this, but you'll also be getting Tour of California coverage from the Fredcast. I'm going to the race this year, and other than the prologue, I'm planning on being at every single stage, and I will try to give you as close to same-day coverage as I can, not just of race results, but I'm also going to try to bring you stories that you might not get on some of your more mainstream media broadcasts. So, cycling stories from a cycling broadcaster, and I hope that you're going to enjoy that. Of course, there is one other outlet for getting a lot of cycling television. Of course, that's cycling.tv. I think they do a great job, and they always deserve a plug here on the Fredcast. Well, just two more bits of news from the world of professional cycling, and this one's a sad one, and of course it has to do with doping. U.S. cyclist Stephen Alfred received an 8-year ban from professional cycling after testing positive for non-natural testosterone and for human chorionic gonadotropin in two separate tests that WADA will end up considering just one offense. The elevated testosterone positive came in an out-of-competition test on May 28th, while the HCG positive test was last June at the Pan Am Cycling Championships in Brazil. At age 39, an 8-year ban pretty much will end Alfred's career, but you should know that USADA actually considered a lifetime ban because Alfred had previously tested positive for norandosterone at the 1998 Commonwealth Games in Kuala Lumpur. Nevertheless, USADA ruled Friday that a reduction to 8 years was justified because of the circumstances surrounding the initial positive results back in 1998. Our final professional cycling story of the evening comes to us from our friend Carlton Reed over at Bike Biz Magazine at bikebiz.com. He notes that the cycling team that includes Eric Zabel and Alessandro Petacchi, that's Milram, has signed a deal with Garmin to supply the entire team with Garmin Edge 305 heart rate and cadence monitoring GPS units for use during training and racing through 2009. According to team manager Gianluigi Stanga, "We've set some tough but achievable goals for the team. Having Garmin on board supplying our cycle computers will enable us to fine-tune our training practices, accurately review each cyclist's performance at every stage of every race, and give us an even better chance of meeting these targets and winning key races." This next story comes to us from listener Gary in Utah, and it's a sad story, but I think that it has a good message for all of us, and it concerns Elton Reed Palmer and his wife, Loa Faye Palmer, both aged 74. They were found dead last week on State Route 29 in San Pete County in rural Utah after their car got stuck in the snow and they got out to try to walk for help. Reed Palmer was a former state legislator in Utah, but what makes him special to the cycling community is perhaps personified by the sign on his house that simply read, "Reed's Bike and Trike." But according to the articles that I read that were sent to me by Gary, Reed Palmer didn't really run much of a cycling business. Instead, he gave away a lot more bikes than he ever sold, and he rarely, if ever, charged children for repairs. According to a neighbor, Catherine Solomon, quote, "Every child in the neighborhood knew if they had a flat tire on a bike or a scooter, they could go to Reed, and he would fix it." Another local resident, Joe Prague, said, "Reed was Mr. Academy Park. He did a lot for this neighborhood." Tammy Baldwin, one of their four daughters, said that her father took up fixing bicycles after he retired. He would introduce himself to new neighbors and ask if the children had bikes. And if kids didn't have bikes, he would give them one, oftentimes at Christmas. She said, quote, he would fix them for a hug if they didn't have any money. So I don't think it will surprise you to hear that when the day of their funeral arrived, so did hundreds of mourners, including dozens and dozens of children. And why did the kids come? According to them, quote, to show that I love him, said Andrew Jones. Or, quote, this is the kid's way of saying thanks, said Barbara Bird. Josh Miller said, he gave me a bike, and he fixed it up whenever I went over there. He gave it to me, and it was in perfect shape, and I hardly ever needed to fix it. I think that in a world that's getting ever more complicated, in a world that's increasingly violent, with terrorism and wars and hatred, it's really, really refreshing to hear a story about a guy like Reed Palmer, who served his country, served his state, but I think what was probably more important to him was helping those kids, making sure that they had a bike, whether they could afford it or not, and making sure that they were happy. So to Reed Palmer and to his wife, may they rest in peace, and thank you for bringing just a little bit of happiness to a couple of future cyclists. Now, on a lighter note, and on a subject that you may have heard us talk about on the Spokesman podcast, as a matter of fact, it was on the very first episode of the Spokesman podcast, we talked about a gentleman by the name of Daniel Cadden, who ended up having to go to court because he rode on a main road on his bike instead of using a bike path. And initially, he was convicted of having done so. Well, Judge Robin Onions, yes, that's Robin Onion's real name, sitting with two magistrates, halted the case against Daniel Cadden this week and threw out his conviction after hearing the evidence from the police. He said that Mr. Cadden had been perfectly entitled to use the road. What pleases cyclists all over the world is that in throwing the case out, the judge said that there was no requirement that forced Daniel Cadden to use the bike path. He said that a fast-moving bike might well decide that it would be safer to use the road rather than coming into contact with pedestrians on the cycle path. Aren't these the things that we're always saying? Isn't this the reason why in a lot of places cyclists have the right not only to ride on the road, but if they need to, if it's safe to do so, to actually take the entire lane? So it's nice to see cyclists vindicated in this way, and it's just a shame that Daniel Cadden had to go through this entire affair to begin with. Well, we've also talked here on the show before about the Nike Plus iPod Sport Kit, which allows you to put a sensor on your running shoe and then use your iPod like a pedometer. Well, Apple and Nike have now been sued by a Colorado company, accusing them of infringing on a patent that covers shoes that, quote, collect data on the wearer's activity. The suit was filed by a company called Fat Rat Technology, and the complaint says that Apple and Nike are using its patented innovations without permission. Fat Rat develops wireless devices that gauge a wearer's performance, and they asked for cash compensation and a court order blocking the use, according to Bloomberg News Service. Quote, Fat Rat has been damaged by the infringing acts of Apple and Nike and will continue to be damaged unless they are stopped by the court. Something interesting that I wasn't aware of is that, according to the reports that I've read, Fat Rat makes products such as the Air Rat, which is a device for measuring sports performance while snowboarding, skiing, or riding a BMX bike. The patent at issue is entitled, quote, Shoes Employing Monitoring Devices and Associated Methods. A spokesman for Nike told Bloomberg, quote, Nike is aware of the complaint and is reviewing the allegations alongside our own intellectual property rights. This one's going to get interesting. And finally for this week, you know, there are just some people who, let's face it, they hate bicycles and they hate cyclists. A 62-year-old man is suspected of stringing wires at neck level across a popular bike path in Lubbock, Texas, as well as scattering nails, broken glass, and rocks across the trail. This was a series of traps that he set because he wanted to, quote, protect the environment, police said. Dwayne Wallace, an avid cyclist in the area, said, quote, this could kill someone. As a matter of fact, he said that his friend was cut across the neck by one of the wires and was thrown from his bike. A grand jury is scheduled to review the case next week to see if the man will face two third-degree felony charges of attempted aggravated assault with a weapon. Each count carries a maximum of 10 years in prison. According to Detective Rene Martinez, he questioned the man about the traps set over at least a year-long period, and the man told him he just wanted to protect wildlife. According to the detective, quote, "He just loves nature." Isn't that special? And with that environmentally safe story, here ends the news for this week. Before we get into the features this week, I've got a question for you. Would you like to win an iPod Shuffle in the color of your choice? No problem. I'm giving away not one, but two iPod Shuffles, as well as a couple of GelBot water bottles, an iPod remote, and some other great stuff to people who will be chosen at random from among those who fill out the new Fredcast listener survey. To fill out the survey, go to the website at www.thefredcast.com and click on the link for the Fredcast listener survey, or go to tonight's show notes and there'll be a link there as well. At the end of the survey, simply provide me with your name and email address. And then at the end of February, I'll randomly choose from among the entries and give away those two iPod Shuffles and the other prizes that I've got. Now, I've created the survey to help learn a little bit more about what you, the Fredcast listener, is looking for in the show. I want to know what your likes are about the show, what you dislike about the show. I want to know a little bit about your cycling habits, what kind of products you own, what kind of products you're thinking about owning. And then there's just a couple of little demographic questions also. I'm going to use this information to keep improving the show and also to prepare some demographic information for potential advertisers. If you provide me with your name and your email address, please don't worry. I will never give away or sell or in any way disclose that information to anyone other than the Fredcast. That information, it will be used if you choose, so that you can be number one, entered into the contest for the prizes, and then two, in the future, I might want to send out announcements about the show, and you'll have the choice in this survey whether or not you'll want to receive those emails from me or not. So be sure to complete your survey no later than midnight Pacific Standard Time on February 28th, 2007. Thank you for filling out the survey. Good luck, and perhaps you will be the winner of an iPod Shuffle in your choice of colors. Thanks for filling out the survey. I really appreciate it. Well, real quickly, I wanted to tell you about an event that I attended last weekend. I was honored and privileged to have the opportunity to attend Competitor Magazine's 2007 Endurance Sports Awards last Saturday night at SeaWorld, right down in San Diego, California. The evening was a chance for Competitor Magazine to review 2006 and to provide awards to certain individuals who have contributed to endurance sports in 2006. It started with a reception that took place in the arcade area at SeaWorld, so it was real fun to see people in suits and ties and tuxedos, you know, playing skee ball and squirting clowns in the mouth and stuff like that. Then we all had dinner, and then we went in for the awards and video presentation. Among the honorees at the awards were none other than Floyd Landis, who won the Competitor Magazine Cyclist of the Year Award. I had an opportunity to meet Floyd and speak with him for just a couple of moments, and I have to tell you that I found him to be just a really super nice individual, that he was gracious and even had a chance to talk to me. I asked him how his hip was doing and just congratulated him on his wins last year. Trust me, no talk of doping, none of that. He was just a super individual, and I really enjoyed meeting him. Somebody else who was also honored was Dean Karnassus. Now, if you're not familiar with Dean Karnassus, I'd point you to the show notes where I've put a link to his website. Dean set himself a goal last year of running 50 marathons in 50 states in 50 days. An amazing achievement. Great to hear him. He won the Toyota Male Runner of the Year Award. The Competitor Magazine Humanitarian Award went to a gentleman by the name of Lieutenant Andy Baldwin. He's a lieutenant in the United States Navy. He's also a doctor. He spent the last year in Laos on a medical mission, providing medical services to the Laotian people. And ladies, Andy Baldwin is also the next bachelor on the ABC TV reality show. He was at the dinner with his commanding officer, as well as with his official ABC chaperone, because apparently he's getting very close to closing up the taping of this year's Bachelor. And I've got to tell you, this is one good-looking young man. Active.com's event of the year went to the Amgen Tour of California, which makes nothing but sense considering the success that the Amgen Tour of California saw last year that we're looking for again this year. Competitor Magazine's Off-Road Triathlete of the Year went to Melanie McQuaid. Now, if you don't know what an off-road triathlete is, you really need to check out what Melanie has done, and I've put a link in the show notes. She takes part in something called the Xterra Series, which is a triathlon that takes place on the dirt, including mountain bikes and trail running. This is an extreme sport. The Cytomax Male Triathlete of the Year went to Chris McCormick. The Tire Female Triathlete of the Year went to McKelly Jones. And there were a couple of challenge athletes who also inspired the entire room. The first was Major David Rozell. Perhaps you're familiar with his story. He is an American soldier. He was serving in Iraq, commanding 140 troops of the 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment. He lost part of his right leg when the Humvee that he was driving in exploded due to an improvised explosive device, and he lost his right leg. He had a below-the-knee amputation. He then was the first American soldier to return to active duty in modern times after having a limb amputated. Following that feat, he then went on to start running triathlons, including running the Ironman World Championship in Kona, Hawaii. Really amazing story. Glad to see that he was there to win an award as well. And the one that brought the house down and had everyone in tears went to the Ironman Competitor of the Year, John Blazeman Blaze. If you're not familiar with John Blaze's story, he is an individual who a couple of years ago was diagnosed with ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease. Once you're diagnosed with ALS right now, it's effectively a death sentence as your body slowly breaks down. Right after his diagnosis, he decided that he was going to run and complete the Ironman. And he did it. And if you've ever seen footage of the event, it was extremely emotional. Last year in 2006, if you watched the Ironman coverage on NBC, you would have seen that there was an individual running for John Blaze. John Blaze won the award and his speech was written and the MC read the speech to the crowd. And when he was done, and when John Blaze had gotten his second or third standing ovation, John Blaze said to the MC, "I'd like to stand up in front of these people." And he got up out of his wheelchair and he stood up and he slowly shuffled over to the podium. He walked up to the microphone and he gave a speech. You could have heard a pin drop in the room as everyone listened to what John Blaze had to say. It was truly an amazing event and extremely inspirational. And I, for one, am glad that I was there. Check out the links in the show notes to all of the winners of the 2006 Endurance Sports Awards, as well as the link to the Endurance Sports Awards website. It was a fantastic evening. A few weeks ago, I received an email from listener Fred, who told me that he had tried out a product that he liked so much that he thought that I should get in touch with the inventor and seller of the product, give it a test, and bring it to you here on the show. And I did that. The product is called CycleSound, and here's my interview with the inventor and owner of the company, Del Rusher. On the line with me today is Del Rusher from CycleSound. I was introduced to Del through a Fredcast listener who said, "You've got to try this product that Del makes." So Del, welcome to the Fredcast.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it.
It's great to have you here. Now, Del, you sent me a sample of your CycleSound product, and I could describe it, but I think it's always best to hear from the guy who invented the thing. Tell all the listeners exactly what CycleSound is.
Well, basically, CycleSound is a very high-quality sound system for cyclists, so they do not have to use earbuds or earphones. Certainly, avid cyclists realize that that is a huge danger, and you need to know what's going on around you and hear what's going on around you. So I developed a sound system that fits right under the seat of the bicycle, clips onto the seat rails, and delivers a superior sound. But it took a lot of research and a lot of testing, but that was over a 5 or 6 year period. But we finally nailed it, and we're now in the market with Cycle Sound.
So let me describe for the listeners a little bit of what it looks like. And for those of you who are at your computers and have the chance right now, go to cyclesound.net, and you'll be able to see a picture of the Cycle Sound. And of course, there'll be a link in the show notes. But what this looks like is your standard seat wedge, a little bit larger than your standard seat wedge, into which you would insert your iPod, your iRiver, whatever MP3 player you'd like. And it's got a cord that comes right out, attaches to that, and the iPod has a little pocket that it goes into. And there's a volume knob. And at first, when you look at it, you think, come on, no way. When you put this thing underneath your seat and you turn that volume knob, you're going to be amazed at the sound that's going to come out. So that if you're thinking, oh no, I like listening to my iPod and putting those earbuds in my ears, despite the fact that I can't hear the traffic, despite the fact that it's probably not legal for me to do that, you're going to be pleasantly surprised. And I was, Del. Tell me how you developed it and how you get that rich sound out of this little box.
Well, I must say I was extremely fortunate in meeting a gentleman. I live in the Las Vegas area. And I met a guy, his name's Tron, and this guy is a genius at computers and a genius at sound systems. And he really showed me the way by finding and testing so many different speakers. But we knew what we wanted, we just had to find it. And through a lot of testing, we actually had a company design our speakers the way we wanted it, because they needed to, actually you needed to be able to turn this thing up full volume and have it not distort. Most sound systems, that's when they fall apart, is when you strictly crank up the volume. And as cyclists know, when you're out there in the wind, that sound is going every which way. And so we wanted to design it so you could really hear it well, and it had to be a quality sound, because I've tested other sound systems, and quite frankly, they deliver noise, but they don't deliver music. And my system does deliver music, and it gives it a nice quality sound, and it fits beautifully with an iPod or other MP3 players. So the advent of this whole system has come along with the introduction of the iPod. And so they've really dovetailed well together to make a great sound system. And it clips on and off the bike quickly, so you can take it into the restaurant with you or take it to the beach. The thing only weighs the same amount as a water bottle full of water, so it's a pound and a half. So you go out and lose a pound and a half, and you're equal. So you're not giving up anything. And also the location of the sound system right under the seat gives it a great center of gravity. So you hardly even know it's there, but you can certainly hear it.
So, and that was one of the things that I noticed when I first got the unit. I thought, gee, you know, this feels like it could be a little bit heavy. But then I went to your website and I noticed exactly what you just said. It's about the same weight as a full water bottle. And when you put it on your bike, because of the location, the fact that it sits underneath your saddle, it was unnoticeable to me. That, and everybody knows I ride a high-end carbon fiber road bike, and so I'm a little bit of a weight weenie sometimes. I barely noticed the fact that it was there, and the fact that I didn't have the earbuds in my ears really made up for that. The one question that I did have about it was, now it displaced my tool bag. I've got a seat wedge that is always underneath my saddle, and I wasn't quite sure what to do with my tools at that point. I'm sure you've run up against that before. What do you tell people when they bring up that objection?
Well, you know, that's absolutely true, because I ran into the same problem. I said, where am I going to put my tools and my tubes? And actually, I found a couple products on the NashBar website. One is called a cage rocket that fits in one of my water bottle cages, and that's where I put my stuff. And then they have these other little bags that you can put up front that fit on the top tube and attached up front. And but actually, the cage has been good for me, and then I use a hydration pack, so I don't need the water bottle cage for my bottle, so I use it for my tools, and it's worked out really well.
And of course, you know, some of the listeners will use a hydration pack, especially if they're on a long tour or perhaps an organized ride or a century or a charity ride or something. So they might have a hydration pack, which is a great place to put tools, or they might use one of those little bento boxes or one of those other places where you can put your tools on your bike. So I've just got to back up a second, because somebody doesn't just dream up a product like this. You must have been trying to solve a problem that you had yourself. I'm guessing you're a cyclist.
Absolutely. I've been cycling since the early 80s, and probably for the last 15 years, I've been finding a way to put sound on my bike. And a lot of it was Radio Shack speakers with carrying 8 C-cell batteries and creating a saddlebag to put the speakers in. And I just kept trying to find a way to get the weight down and get the sound up. So I just, over years, I've got a garage full of prototypes. You wouldn't believe what I've gone through to try on tests to make this thing work. But it was worth the effort. I just knew that there was something I wanted, and I knew in my mind what it was going to be, but it just took a while to get there. And I paid a great designer in New York to design a great-looking system that was totally impractical. So I took it upon myself to design this one, and we scored. It's working well, and it's become very popular.
So tell me a little bit about the speakers and just the technology that goes into cycle sound, because, as you said, the sound doesn't get distorted, but you still get a really nice, rich, clean sound. There's got to be some real nice technology that you've put into this bag.
Well, there's a couple things in that regard. I was on the impression that I need a 4-speaker system, number one, and I thought that I needed 4-inch speakers. What I really needed was highly efficient speakers. These speakers are only 2-inch speakers, but they're highly efficient and very, very effective. The second thing was each speaker has its own digital amplifier. A lot of people cheat in that area and use one digital amp for 2 speakers. We put ours together with each one having a specifically designed amplifier. And the key to that also is they're very heat resistant. So, you know, I bike in Las Vegas. It's 110 degrees at sometimes. There's no problem whatsoever with heat buildup with these, because they're very efficient amplifiers and very efficient speakers. And it's the way that the speakers are wound inside to give its efficiency. And I don't know all the technical things about that. I do know that it was in the winding process inside those speakers that make them. So you can crank it up, get a good sound, and no distortion.
Now, on the other side of the spectrum from being worried about heat and heat resistance, what about the weather? What about moisture? How will the system stand up to, you know, the everyday environmental challenges that we all face cycling?
Well, I've had this thing, not here, but when I was cycling out in Iowa, I've had this thing in a torrential downpour, and it's been designed. So the cover over the speakers themselves are water resistant. The cover over the speaker adds to that resistance. And I swear to you, you'd have to shoot it with a fire hose in order to get water into that thing to cause any kind of a problem. So it's extremely water resistant. And the outside case is a very strong DuPont nylon material. So it really withstands heat and weather, both hot and cold. So I've had it tested in all kinds of weather, and I've tested over 2 years with the same speaker and same bag, so everything is still working perfectly. So it stood the test of time and weather.
Now, you mentioned Iowa. I'm guessing that, and I can see it on your website, you're talking about doing the Ragbri. Is that correct?
That's correct. It'll be my 19th year of doing Ragbri, and that's the other place where I really got the idea how people enjoy listening to music, because I have a drawer full of pictures that I've taken on Ragbri of people with strapped-on boomboxes, guys pulling huge carts behind their bikes with sound systems, but nobody really having a commercially made one. And I wanted to solve that problem first for myself and other cyclists who really enjoy cycling to music. So I introduced it last year at Ragbri, and it was very popular. Believe me. So I'm going back this next year with a boatload of product and expect to sell every one of them.
Now, you talked about batteries before, and one of the things that I know, it only takes 6 AA batteries. What kind of battery life will people get out of the system with just 6 small little cells like that?
Well, my testing is this, that I generally get 10 to 12 hours playing this at full volume. Out of regular batteries. Now, another thing I've done is I've used rechargeable batteries, too. I get 12 rechargeable batteries, and I put six in and carry six with me. And when it starts, you can tell the battery life going on. I replace them, bring them home when I'm done writing, recharge them up, and do it that way. But when I'm out on a big ride, a several day ride, I want to have disposable batteries so that I don't have to mess around with recharging batteries. So you have two options: you can use rechargeables or you can use disposables. But as I say, you can get a good 10 hours. Of play out of these things at full volume.
A couple of weeks ago, I did a review of some products that people will use so that if they're using their iPod, for instance, they don't have to be touching their iPod in order to change the volume or change the track or something like that. Have you ever had anybody say that they've used any of these iPod remotes? Because it seems to me that this would be a perfect application for something like that.
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up because I have tested a lot of the different ones. And actually, you mentioned one on your podcast a few weeks ago, and it was by Monster Cable. And so I bought one of those, and actually I found that to be the best one. And I put that thing up front in my bike, and so it's a radio signal, so it's wireless. And so if I want to change the track on my iPod that's in the back, I just punch a button. If I want to change the volume, if I want to turn it on or off, if I want to change my playlist, it will do that. So it's very flexible, and it's the best one that I've tested. I've tested probably four or five different remote systems, but that one really stands out as a great system.
Yeah, that was one of the three that I tested, and it's funny. It's I told somebody recently that one has sort of become the one that I use on my bike. The one from Skosh, I think is how you say the other name, is the one that I use at home. So if I hook the iPod up to my TV to watch a video, because that one has such great range, I use the Skosh in the house, and I use the Monster out on the bike. So
right. I have both of those. Yeah, exactly. And I've tried the Griffin too, which works pretty well, but it takes a little more work to make that one work. The Skosh and the Monster are very compatible with the iPod system. One other thing I wanted to mention too is that this system will also fit other than a standard bicycle, because there are people who ride tandems, people who ride recumbents, and so we have attachments and show within our website how you can attach the system to your whatever unit you're riding. And I use one good example of people who were riding tandems when I was on Ragbri, and we were able to fix the unit up right between the two riders, and that worked out extremely well. So they both got the benefit. The one behind could do all the adjustments, and the one in front could enjoy the music. So it worked out great.
That's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. Okay, so tell everybody once again where they can find the product and also how much the product costs.
Okay, you can find it at cyclesound.net, and the price on the product is $159.95. And currently we're running sent through Christmas, and it became so popular that we continued free shipping. But you can go in and take a look at it, and quite frankly, you can email me if you have any questions, or I can give you a number right now. You can call me with any questions, and that's area code 702-810-9676. So if you want any information, this product is fully guaranteed. We believe in two things: quality and service on this. And believe me, we're working on the Lexus system of bicycle sound systems, and we stand behind it. So we want people to be happy. I'm a cyclist. I've got to be pleased. I want you pleased.
Well, Dell, I have to tell you, my daughter and I are doing a ride in April, and we're going to be riding across California with a bunch of other fifth graders and their parents. And this is a perfect product for something like that, because it'll keep those fifth graders from thinking about how their legs feel as we're going up and down
of
those hills.
So and think of the fun you can have building the playlist for that one.
Exactly. I've already started thinking about that.
Yeah.
Well, Dell, thanks so much for your time, and thanks for making a great product. And, of course, there'll be links in the show notes. That's www.cyclesound.net. Dell, thanks once again.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it.
You'll of course remember that last week I brought up the controversial topic of mandatory helmet laws, and I took your comments and played them on the show. I got a couple of more comments this week, and I thought that they were really interesting, and I thought I would play them for you now. So here we go.
Hey David, this is Mike Fish from trituna.blogspot.com. I live in the Salt Lake City area, and I wanted to check in with my take on the proposed mandatory bike helmet law. And I admit that even though I'm smack in the middle of this red state, I lean a little bit more to the left. So, depending on what it is, I don't get too concerned about the government telling me I can't do this or that I have to do that. Within reason, of course. So if they tell me I can't light up a smoke while I'm gassing up the Scion, or they tell me that I have to wear my seatbelt, or they tell me that I can't walk my whippets on the shoulder of the interstate, that doesn't get my chamois in a bunch. For me, these are all self-evident and common sense, but I realize that common sense is not that common these days, and these behaviors, including riding without a helmet, these behaviors have many costs. Some costs that are measurable and some that are immeasurable, costs to the individual and costs to the community, and costs that are obvious and costs that are more subtle. I understand and respect that others will feel differently about this, but to me it seems that instead of reacting against the freedom-restricting legislation, instead of taking an either-or stand, I'd favor an and-both approach. So if I were on the mayor's bike advisory committee, or if Rocky told me he wanted a mandatory helmet law, I'd respond, hey, it's great you're concerned about rider safety. And while we're taking a stand on this important issue, Rocky, let's make some progress on cycling infrastructure. Let's work for a change in driver education. Let's continue the work of transforming Salt Lake into a truly cycling-friendly city. That's what I'd say, David. As a guy who lives here, I know we have bigger issues to address. We still have those killer drainage grates with the big wide slots that run parallel to travel, right in designated bike lanes. We have many streets and roads in atrocious condition. We've got a lot of roads that don't have bike lanes at all where we should. Our drivers aren't bike savvy, and our law enforcement and court systems don't always recognize the rights and vulnerabilities of cyclists. So if Rocky Anderson, who's a fairly progressive guy, wants to do something to protect cyclists, even if it's to protect them from themselves, I say let's embrace the idea and push while the momentum's on our side. That's my two cents worth. Again, this is Mike Fish from trituna.blogspot.com. Ride hard and keep your balance.
Okay, and this next one I think is basically tongue-in-cheek, but I have a feeling that the message at the end is heartfelt. So here we go with yet another comment about mandatory helmet laws.
Hi. I'm on my bike right now, and I just want to say that I'm opposed to helmet laws completely. Ah! Oh, yeah. Oh, wait. No, I'm not actually on my bike, but that's what can happen. You could just get hit and smack your head. So even though I'm not nuts about the government in my face, I think that helmet laws should be morally mandatory, but not legally mandatory. Wear a helmet or you are an idiot.
Daryl wrote in to say that he had been listening to the latest episode of the Spokesman podcast. And by the way, this is a great place to plug that other podcast that I do. It's the-spokesman.com. And it's a roundtable of other cycling podcasters and bloggers. We just talk about the news of the day in the world of cycling. And he was commenting on the discussion that we had on the Spokesman this week about mandatory helmet laws and some of the comments that were made by Carlton Reed from Bike Biz, as well as Tim Grawl from The Crooked Cog. And he says that he wanted to make a comment about what Carlton and Tim had to say. So he continues, first, my bias. I agree with the general consensus voiced during the podcast. I choose to wear a helmet, but I don't want helmet use legislated. It's a very slippery slope indeed when you begin to force issues for the, quote, common good. Where do you draw the line? I work in EMS on an ambulance, and I've been cycling for over 30 years. I can say from both sides of the issue that some of what Carlton has said regarding helmet effectiveness in auto versus cyclist crashes is simply untrue. Carlton said fairly emphatically that helmets won't save you in a collision between cyclist and vehicle. Partly true, but mostly false. It's a fact that the majority of the initial injuries to cyclists hit by automobiles are to their legs, pelvis, and chest. A helmet won't help with any of those injuries, but generally, those injuries don't kill people. It's also a fact that an object flying through the air, even a very short distance, is going to have to hit the ground eventually. And this is where a helmet can help tremendously. A fall from 6 feet, that is, a simple collapse to the ground, can produce a deadly head injury if your head is the first thing to hit the pavement, as would be the case in an unconscious fall. A helmet in this case would greatly improve the person's chance of a happy outcome. This fall to the ground is the result of virtually every auto versus cyclist collision. An injured cyclist flying through the air needs all the protection available when he or she finally strikes the pavement and comes to a stop. I respect people who choose not to wear helmets, but if I'm called to pick you up after a non-helmet bicycle crash, all I want to hear is, man, am I lucky. I enjoy the Fredcast and the Spokesman podcast. Keep up the good work. The good and controversial work, Daryl says. And then he says, P.S. As an aside, Tim's comments regarding the weight of cycling helmets making your head-to-ground impact worse is simply false. As an experiment, bash your head as hard as you can into a wall without a helmet and with a helmet, then rethink the issue. Thanks, Daryl. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Curtis. Thanks, everyone who sent in comments on this issue. It's controversial, but it's important, and I'm glad we're having the conversation. And finally, I've got an upcoming ride to tell you about, but instead of my telling you about it, I thought that our listener, who has actually been on the ride, would tell you about it and let you know that it's coming up. This is the Montreal to Portland AIDS Vaccine Bike Trek. It's put on by CharityTreks.org. It's August the 14th through the 18th, and here's our listener to tell us about the ride and give us a review of last year's ride.
Thank you, David. I'd like to share my favorite ride with all of your Fredcast listeners, but first, I'd like to do a brief intro of who I am. From age 20 to age 40, I became very sedentary. I gained 40 or 50 pounds, and then at age 44, I had a heart attack. After my event, I changed my diet and I began to exercise. Cycling has become a real big part of my life. And although I ride a lot, I commute to and from work, and I'm not a fast rider, especially on the hills. I don't race, and although I'm in decent shape, I'm no athlete, and at age 48, I'm no spring chicken either. This year, I'm going to be doing my fifth Charity Treks ride, riding from Montreal to Portland, Maine. It's about 450 miles, which we cover over 4.5 days, and I just love this ride for a variety of reasons. Firstly is the cause. We ride to raise money to support AIDS vaccine research. AIDS is spreading to 10 new people every minute. Each year sees about 500,000 new children being affected with HIV. And most of the new victims are young, many of them teenagers. Here in the developed world, we have a handle on the disease. We know how it's spread, we've got relatively effective programs slowing its transmission, and we have drugs which allow HIV-positive people to live productive lives for decades after diagnosis. Unfortunately, many of those who are infected are desperately poor, and our solutions just are not going to work for them. If you earn less than a dollar per day, a condom is not a viable option. The only way that we'll be able to keep AIDS from claiming tens of millions of lives in Africa, China, and India will be with a safe, effective vaccine. Another reason that I do this ride is that it's a great challenging ride with support that'll allow almost anybody to finish it. There are rest stops placed every 15 to 20 miles and a fantastic support crew who will help you to do a ride which has 3 centuries in 4 days, which crosses the Vermont Green Mountains with some of the most gorgeous scenery that we have to offer. If you've ever ridden a century and survived, you'll be able to do this ride. Many of those who ride do their first century on the first day of the ride, although I wouldn't recommend that. Many charity rides have large minimums that they require for fundraising. The Charity Treks rides do not. There's no minimum. And it's not easy to say, that's not to say that you shouldn't be working hard at your fundraising, but it does mean that there's a more diverse cross-section of people riding in this ride than you'll find in a lot of the others. There are students, people who are HIV positive, people who don't have a network that allows them to raise a lot of money, will be riding alongside doctors and lawyers who've raised tens of thousands of dollars. The cross-section really makes this a wonderful ride. While talking about fundraising, one other thing that makes it easier to raise money for the Charity Treks ride is the fact that 100% of the donations that you collect go to the end beneficiaries. All of the costs of the ride are covered by the rider fees, and separate donations given to charity treks. It's hard to find another charity ride that can beat that. The starting point, Montreal, is a great city to begin a ride in. Most riders come up a few days early to enjoy the city before rolling through the Quebec countryside. The finish in Portland, Maine is another great place to spend a few days as a tourist, and lobster makes a fantastic recovery meal. Many charity rides are huge, with thousands of riders and hundreds of support crew. The charity treks rides are much more manageable. We end up with about 100 riders and maybe 20 crew or so, and by the end of the ride, you'll know everybody and you'll know all their stories. You'll very rarely find yourself riding alongside a stranger, and if you do, that won't last. The first day takes us from Montreal to Burlington, Vermont, almost exactly 100 miles and almost completely flat. We ride down the islands in the middle of Lake Champlain for an incredibly scenic ride. The second day is our hardest day, with 120 miles, much of which is uphill through the incredible Vermont Green Mountains. Start early, take it slow, and you'll finish the day and have stories to tell. Fantastic, fantastic day. The third day takes us from Keechee Gorge in Vermont to Webster, New Hampshire. It's a relatively short ride, less than 80 miles, and again through rural Vermont and New Hampshire. Pretty area. The last full day is another century, where we ride to the shores of Sebago Lake and camp in one of the most beautiful places imaginable, enjoy our last night together. Then on the last day, we ride into Portland, Maine, celebrate our accomplishment, and then clean up for a big celebration dinner at a local restaurant. The ride takes place in mid-August, and you can get more information on charitytreks.org. If you do make it to the ride, say hi. My name is Mark. I ride a red and black Peter Mooney custom steel bike, and it's the prettiest bike on the ride. Hope to see you there.
Mark, thanks so much for sending in that review and preview of the Montreal to Portland AIDS vaccine bike trek put on by charitytreks.org. That's August 14th through the 18th. And of course, I've put links in the show notes. If you would like to promote your favorite ride, please send me an email or, like Mark did, send me a great recording letting us know all about the ride, and I'll be happy to play it right here on the Fredcast. Well, that's going to do it for this evening, but before we go, as always, thanks to Cambria Bicycle Outfitters for sponsoring the show, and don't forget that promo code on the show notes that'll give you 20% off your next order. To contact us here at the Fredcast, go ahead and send us an email anytime. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. Of course, you can visit our website at www.thefredcast.com, and that's where you can go to take the listener survey and get entered to win one of those iPod shuffles or other great prizes that I'll be giving away. Of course, if you want to send in audio comments, there's several ways to do it. You can use the Fredcast listener hotline. That's area code 206-203-FRED. You can send an audio comment in an email, or you can use the send an audio comment link on the right-hand side of the webpage. That's very, very easy to do. Tonight's PodSafe Cycling music comes to us, as always, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Tonight's music is by Robert Walker. It's called Ballad, and I've got links in the show notes to where you can find all the information you'd like on Robert Walker. We'll see you all next week. It's the week before the tour of California, so I expect there'll be a lot of news once again. Until then, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.